I would say the highlights have been, as much as anything, the young men who have been in the program. Certainly everybody knows the story of Garrett Dolan and his fantastic family and what they've meant for the university and what he meant to the university. But there have been many other fine young men that we've had come through the program. And I think the most important thing is the number of lives that I feel like we've changed through the football program.
Welcome to Think About It, a podcast from Houston Baptist University here in Houston, Texas. At HBU, we empower our students so their beliefs can fuel their lives. From our competitive nursing programs to our world-renowned theologians, we prepare our students to thrive at the university level and beyond. And now we join our host, Dr. Jerry Johnston, with today's guest.
Steve Maniacci joined HBU Athletics in January of 2007 and was the assistant director prior to being named the interim athletic director in May of 2009. He became director of athletics at HBU in February 2010. And he has a very important job, an overreaching job, 17 men's and women's sports teams. During his time as director, HBU has transitioned back to NCAA Division I membership status, joined the Southland Conference, and started a football program which competes in the football championship subdivision. And that sounds like a lot of responsibility.
Well, I have a lot of help. Not just me, certainly.
You do have,
we
a
have
lot
a team.
Of help. You have a lot of great help.
We do. We help. Do.
I mean, so before you came here, you were at Rice?
I was, that's correct. For a long time, I was there for 26 years.
26 years at Rice.
Yep.
And that's certainly probably taught a lot of lessons and learned a lot of things, huh?
Well, it did. I started out over there at about as low as you could start as an intern in the athletic department working in marketing and promotions. And over the course of 26 years, I was very fortunate to be able to stay there that entire time. And when I left, I was the senior associate athletic director there, the number 2 person in the athletic department.
Wow. And so Rice certainly has quite renowned in the area of sports.
Yeah, we were very fortunate during the time in which we were there. We won, I believe, somewhere in the neighborhood of 25 conference championships, including one national championship in baseball, certainly in 2003. So that, of course, was the culmination of pretty much everything we did. Anytime you win a national championship at the highest level in the intercollegiate ranks, that's a pretty good culmination.
Yeah. And so you're from Ohio.
I am.
And what city in Ohio again?
Little town called Piqua, Ohio, yeah. Which is about 25 miles north of Dayton, Ohio. A lot
sure.
of people know where Dayton is.
Right. And explain to us, Steve, the transition from Rice to how you ended up at HBU.
Well, interestingly enough, there was a change in leadership at Rice. And a lot of times when that happens in intercollegiate athletics, the new leaders like their own folks in place. And so I left Rice in the summer of 2006 and initially took a job at IUPUI in Indianapolis, Indiana.
Oh, yeah.
As the number 2 person there and the chief fundraiser there. A good friend of mine was the athletic director there, and so was able to land there. And through the fall of that year, did that. And then there were some family circumstances that brought me back to Houston and I had to come back home. Got a call in late December. Really, I think between Christmas and New Year's, I got a call from Dr. Sloan, and he wanted to know, he said he had knew that I wasn't doing anything, and wanted to know if I would come out and do a study for him to see about what it would take to get this university to come back to Division I athletics. Said, certainly I wasn't doing anything, I'd be happy to come out and help him, and kind of the rest is history.
And so when you say come back to Division I, so was HBU at one time in Division I?
Yes, it was. Up until 1990, this university was in the Transamerica Athletic Conference as a Division I institution. Had a number of different sports, many of the same sports that we're playing today, and had a very good history and was a very good athletic department. Quite frankly, Houston, and I was good friends with a lot of the coaches out here during my time at Rice. Houston Baptist University would often beat Rice, Houston, others within this local area because they had a very, very good athletic department.
And, I mean, what was the instigator of that way back in the history of HBU? Do you know?
The fact they had the good athletic department, or the fact
yeah.
they dropped athletics?
Well, both.
Well, they had a good athletic department because back in the originally in the late 80s, early 90s, or even prior to that, there were two divisions in college athletics. There was big college and small college. And they were a small college athletic team and did very, very well. Had always done very well in athletics. Had a president at the time who very much believed in what athletics could do for the university and certainly developed that. Then changed presidents in 1989, 1990. And the president at that time just felt like his focus wasn't on intercollegiate athletics at the highest level. And so initially dropped athletics, but then brought it back at the NAIA level. And this was a very, very good NAIA athletic department. The year that I got here in the spring of 2007, the university actually made an appearance in all five national championships that it competed in.
Wow.
Didn't make the final game, but was like in the final 16 of every sport they competed in. So very, very high ranking athletic department always. That's always been the nature here.
And so what was the process to come back into NCAA Division I?
Well, interestingly enough, when Dr. Sloan asked me to look into what it would take, we started digging into the rules book. The NCAA, as most people has a lot of rules.
Mm-hmm.
The rule book alone is about that thick, and there's a bunch of codicils online that go along with that rule book that are endless. So he tasked me with looking at what it would take, and we did that. So we did some research and found out that we found a line in the book, written in the book, that if you had been an NCAA member prior, you could come back to the Division I. It would take you 3 years to come back. And so in the spring of that year, we sent a letter to the NCAA asking for readmittance to the NCAA, citing that rule, and asking for what that three-year probationary period would look like. Didn't hear anything, longest time, still didn't hear anything. And finally, midsummer, we got a letter back from them saying, thank you for your application, thank you for your $10,000 check membership fee. However, we meant to take that line out of the manual, and it will be a seven-year process to get back into the NCAA. Well, we somehow didn't think that was probably quite right, because it was obviously clearly written in the NCAA manual that it was only a three-year period. We were certainly willing to do a three-year probationary period, but we felt like the seven-year probationary period for a team that had been a Division I team before was a bit much. So we had a bit of a legal battle with the NCAA. 2.5 years later, we settled that suit. Neither side won. However, we got back into the NCAA, so you can figure out from there who actually won. It ended up being close to a four-year process, which they then spelled out for what we needed to do. And of course, by the time the lawsuit was over, the four-year process was only about a year from being completed anyway, and so it really didn't make that much difference at the time. So we came back into the NCAA as full members. Almost as soon as we got back in, Dr. Sloan asked me to take a look at what it would take to play Division I football. Now, we didn't want to muddy the waters coming back in initially, so we kind of did that study a little bit undercover, if you will, and found out that you could do it, but the really big thing was what kind of league were you going to be in and what level of football were you going to try to play. The NCAA has a rule that if you're Division I in all your sports, then any sport you add has to be Division I. If you're Division II or III, you can play up in one sport, but if you're in Division I in all the rest of your sports, whatever sport you start is going to have to be Division I. So we knew that we were going to have to start football at the Division I level. And so we knew then that we were going to have a league to play in. Well, quite frankly, the only league that really made sense, we weren't going to get into the Big 12, okay? As much as I joked about I had Texas on speed dial, it wasn't too likely that we were really going to get into the Big 12.
Yeah.
So we knew that the most likely candidate for us was going to be the Southland Conference. And so we went up and meet with the commissioner of the Southland Conference. And we had met with him a couple years prior when we were in the transition period, because at that time that was the most likely conference for us to get our sports in. It's a regional conference. Pretty much we are surrounded by Southland Conference teams, and that really was the conference that fit us best. And he said at the time, if you want in, you're probably going to have to start football. So we went back to him and said, well, what if we started football? He said, if you tell me you'll start football, we'll come down and do a tour of your campus and with our membership folks and see if you're a proper fit for the Southland. So later in the fall, they came in and did a tour of the campus. We put on a really nice dog and pony show, and it wasn't but about a week later that they they came back and said, assuming you're willing to start football, we're willing to take you in. And so that was the that really was the impetus to get football started.
And it is a major undertaking, an NCAA football team, right?
Oh, yes.
I mean,
yes.
Can you kind of help us? I mean,
it's a major undertaking for a campus where there wasn't even a football, literally a football on campus. We didn't have an intramural football. So it's everything from hiring, because there were no football people on the campus, hiring the full staff, hiring the people that you need. And it's not just the football coaches. There's equipment managers, trainers, sports information directors. You need more academic people than what we had before, just on and on and on. And so getting all those people in place, getting a schedule in place to play, and then beginning to recruit the young men to come and play that sport here. I will tell you that the first year, the first spring that we after we announced football, we had, I believe at the time, 11 or 12 young men on the campus who came out for spring drills. And we did spring drills on an intramural field that was located about where the football field is now. But I remember very distinctly that Coach Seeley and I were out there literally ourselves lining off the field with a marker, marker machine, trying to get the field in place so that we could actually have a football practice. And so it started with that. It started with, as I say, 11 or 12 young men on the campus. We had to, of course, recruit a large number of people because we were going to start playing that next fall. And so we went out and we recruited, I think our initial class was somewhere in the neighborhood of 60.
Wow, so that was a lot of recruitment.
It was a lot of recruitment over the course of one summer. And we did it a little differently than some other folks have done it, in that the first year we played football as a club sport. Even though we were playing other four-year institutions, we played as a club sport. And what that allowed us to do is allowed us to not have to follow the NCAA rules that first year, which meant we could recruit more bodies than the NCAA would normally allow. It also meant that we didn't have to play the same number of games that the NCAA normally requires. So that first year we played as a club sport, and what that did for us is it meant that all the kids that we brought in that year actually got to play their 4 years of Division I competition plus the 1 year of club sport. So they actually got to play five full years. So we felt like that was going to give us an advantage going into their first NCAA year. So that first year, I believe we played seven ball games. Played everybody. We started out Wayland Baptist. Played I think one other club team actually. But as many people will remember, we started out our first game, our very first football game, was at Sam Houston State. Now, Sam Houston State had been in the national championship game the year before. Sam Houston State is perennially one of the top four or five right. FCS institutions, football institutions in the United States. So obviously everybody thought we were absolutely crazy. You know, what are you doing? You can't play those people. Well, we understood that we weren't going to have the talent to line up and play, beat those people. But we wanted to send a message.
Sure.
We wanted to send a message to the rest of that league, and we wanted to send a message to everybody, all of our fans, that we were serious about this. That it wasn't just, you know, it just wasn't club sports. It wasn't just get out there and kick the football around. We were serious about it. And the interesting thing I remember about that game most of all was that it was the first game of the season, so it was very, very hot. It was a very hot late August, early September day. I don't remember which. Probably easily 110, 120 degrees on the turf out
wow.
there. We had our 55, 60 guys by that time, and they had their 120, you know, and we kicked off that day, and I'll never forget, Dr. Sloan came up to me during the game and said, you know, Steve, he said, before the game today, I met more HBU alumni. Now, keep in mind, we were playing at Sam Houston.
Right.
He said, I met more HBU alumni than I've met in the 5 years since I've been president.
That's amazing.
And we had a huge contingent, filled about half the stadium up there. Sam Houston will tell you that to this day is the largest non-conference football game that they've ever played because we weren't in the conference yet at that point.
Sure.
And we filled the stadium up. And I'll never forget, game was over. As you can imagine, the score was pretty one-sided. but when the game was over, all of our fans went down to where the visiting team came off the field and stood along the railing there and all clapped for our kids. Gave them a standing ovation for the effort that they put on that day. And so it got us off. It really did end up getting us off on the right foot.
What an amazing story. I mean, the enormous effort to launch such a program. Give us synoptically from that day to this. I mean, some of the highlights.
Well, you know, we'd like for there to be more highlights, to be honest with you. But I would say the highlights have been, as much as anything, the young men who have been in the program. Certainly everybody knows the story of Garrett Dolan and his fantastic family and what they've meant for the university and what he meant to the university. But there have been many other fine young men that we've had come through the program. And I think the most important thing is the number of lives that I feel like we've changed through the football program. The number of young men that we've brought to the Lord has been a tremendous number. It's annually 30 or 40 a year.
And, you know, that alone is amazing.
I mean, it is. It is. A lot of these young men come from families where a lot of times their mothers and or fathers may have a relationship with the Lord, but may not. A lot of them come from disadvantaged backgrounds where it's been a struggle just to get through high school. And so when they come here, this really becomes the first place where a lot of times a lot of them feel safe.
Right.
And so they're more open to things than they could possibly be when they were in high school and junior high. And so it's been extraordinary to watch the transformation of these young men as they've come in here. A lot of times they come in and they're a little rough coming in, no doubt, because they've come from a rough background.
Sure.
But before they graduate, and most of them do graduate. We graduate at 85% of our athletes, so most of them do graduate. And by the time they've graduated, the transformation from the young kids that they came in at to the young men that they're leaving at, and again, most of them, by the time they're gone, will have accepted the Lord.
Yeah, and I've met several of them, and it's just really distinctive, genuine testimonies of faith in Christ. And Vic Sheely, your coach, I mean, boy, what a consummate Christian.
Absolutely.
What a great leader.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Vic comes from a long line of consummate Christians.
Yes,
as a matter of fact,
does.
Vic's father, Dal, longtime college football coach in the country, but ended his career as the leader of the Fellowship of Christian Athletes in this country. And so just an absolutely wonderful family, wonderful family.
Yeah, and I knew Dal. In fact, met with him at FCA's headquarters, and Dal was just a stalwart Christian leader.
Absolutely.
And you can see it in his son.
Absolutely.
You know, and that brings it back to, you know, the world obviously registers everything by wins and losses, and yet, you know, in my own career, I've had the opportunity to be neighbors with a lot of NFL people. Mm-hmm. You know, Joe Montana lived down the street, one of our areas, and we used to go trick-or-treating with different people that it was kind of no big deal to me because I had it my whole life.
Sure.
And, boy, I'll tell you, the story that's not really told is the tragedy that sometimes follows a lot of great athletes.
Yeah.
And you can make a pot of gold and be bankrupt by the end of your life.
Right.
One in particular, I'll leave unnamed, but so well known. And he and his daughter and my daughter, we go trick-or-treating together. And he told me all the war stories and all the who's who. But, you know, the last I heard, he was homeless, a drug addict, family destroyed. And, you know, got into cocaine and the rest is history. There's a difference being made in these athletes at HBU.
Right.
And I think it's important for us to really underscore that.
Yes, I agree. I agree. As I always say, our athletic department is built on three pillars. Most athletic departments are built on two: academics and athletics.
Right.
The really good ones do a good job at academics as well as athletics. We are built on three. Our third leg is that of Christian principles. And so no one leg is any longer than any other one. But I will tell you that at the end of the day, the Christian principles one is probably the strongest.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, the analogy I always use is of a stool. If you have a stool that only has two legs, it's going to be hard to balance on that stool.
Right.
But if you have a stool that has three legs, you're pretty solid. you're pretty solid.
Right. And the reality is that, you know, obviously every athletic program, and it takes time to grow and mature and to get wins, but in God's eternal perspective, there's no bigger touchdown than bringing somebody
Absolutely.
To Christ.
Absolutely.
I mean, that thought that Jesus gave in Matthew 16, what shall a man give in exchange of his soul? It's priceless.
Absolutely.
It's a leadership thing, though. I mean, to me, it seems that a team is about as spiritual as its coaches.
True. Absolutely.
Would you agree with that?
Yeah, absolutely. Always. Always the case. I mean, teams always take after their leaders. Whatever qualities that their leaders possess, generally speaking, their team is going to mimic those qualities. I think undoubtedly.
And so now and I heard a statistic at the recent HBU board meeting that I got to tell you just shocked me. And it was Steve Kearns who got up, HBU trustee, and he, you know, talked about a program we're going to talk about here in a minute, of a fundraising initiative. But he made this statement, and correct me if I'm wrong, that Houston Metro has 400 students that are recruited to college football?
Oh, I would be surprised if it was that low. I think it's probably a bigger number than that. That's probably Division I athletes, I would guess.
And so how would that compare to other metropolitan areas?
Well, certainly would compare favorably to L.A.
To L.A.
And would compare favorably to Miami. But those three, us, LA, and Miami, would by far and away lead the number, and certainly in football, by far.
And I've always said that HBU has the future advantage because it is in Houston.
Right.
And Dr. Sloan has also said this repeatedly. It's a unique thing to have a distinctly Christian university committed to academic excellence with Division I athletics that's in what is soon to be the third largest city in America.
Absolutely.
I mean,
very unusual mix.
So, I mean, why is that? Quantitatively, how many is it, and why is that you have such a...
Well, I think certainly, as we all know, Texas is football. And this is the largest aggregate number of people in the state of Texas are right here within this metro area. And so from the time young men grow up in this state, they want to play football by and large. Not everybody, but most of them want to play football. And so you just have such a large number of football players congregated in this one area that just through attrition, you're going to have a lot of great football players end up coming out of high school. And every college in the country knows that. So every college in the country recruits Houston to some degree or another. Just depending on how much they can afford to do, but they all do it. Even down to at the end of the year, when everybody else has already signed scholarships, the Texans have done a really good job of putting on an end of the spring combine at their facilities over there, where all the small colleges come in and basically then grab up all the players that are remaining for all the little colleges in the country. So, I mean, you could go to some small college in Kansas and just as likely to find a kid from Houston as you could go to Ohio State and find a kid from Houston or Boston College or UCLA or anywhere else. I mean, they're just spread throughout the country.
My son-in-law is from Ohio, and he played quarterback at Liberty and married my daughter. But he was shocked when he was on a recent visit that the KDISD had just finished their football stadium, high school, seats 12,000.
Right, right. It would be the envy of many small colleges throughout the Midwest and the East Coast and all across this country. That's one of the things that, quite frankly, we fight.
Right.
Is that the fact that the facilities and the attention that in particular in football, that the young men get at the high school level, it's not quite the same as what it is sometimes when they come to some of the smaller colleges. And they're used to a level of, as I say, attention that probably is going to be a little different, hand-holding maybe, if you will, at the high school level. It's going to be a little different when they get into college, certainly at this level, and we put most of the onus on them to be responsible for themselves. So that there's a bit of a transition period there that's simply because of that. And certainly in the facilities area, obviously, a lot of the high schools, certainly the surrounding high schools, maybe not the inner city high schools, but the surrounding high schools, almost by and large, all of them have nicer facilities than what we do currently.
Here at HBU, we influence the culture around us by challenging our students to put their beliefs into action every day.